Welcome, 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 and thank you so very much for joining me on another episode of Talking Cloud. Now, you know, this is where we talk about cloud, and it's really, come on, what isn't got to do with cloud computing today? So it's really no holds barred, no limitations. We take it anywhere, and we try to have a little bit of a slant towards security. And as you all know, I am just a Gilligan. I am not the professor in this equation, but I seem to be really fortunate and able to find some amazing ones. And man, today we're going to have we'll probably have to cut it short because I can't take too much time. We could probably talk all day with Roland. So let me tell you about who we've got on the dock today. Back in the late 90s, he started out VP engineering for Tempest Software. He was a consultant at Ogilvy. He's VP engineering at a company called WhenU, and he can explain what some of these are. If I go through all these, it might just take too much time. Multiple advisory roles for multiple companies that sound very interesting, went on and was a CTO and co-founder of Compliancy Group, then an advisor at Blue Kava, technical advisor at Media Math, technical advisor at Ion Clothing. And some of these are, 5-10 years. So, and these are running simultaneously. The guy's busier than a three-headed cat at a bird show. Keep going. He's a partner at Hebbian Labs, technical advisor at Flight Desk. You can talk about that. CTO, consultant, and a Mad Tech Advisors. And that's a continuing freelance role. And for the last nearly 2 years, he's been the chief technology officer and chief operating officer of a very innovative AI-based OT, IoT, really IT network security company. It's pretty cool. They're called Insight Cyber. And so with me today, I have Roland Cozzolino. And Roland, so cool to have you here, man. I'm excited to talk to you because I know you've got a lot of really great experience in what seems to be the hottest topic around AI. So welcome to the program, man. Listen, I went through that in like a minute or two. Why don't you just talk a little bit about you and your background, and we'll take it wherever we want to go from that point.
Well, first and foremost, I want to thank you so much for inviting me to this. I've listened to your podcast. They're quite brilliant.
I always tell everybody, I'm no Ron Burgundy, but I try to have fun. You know what I mean?
Yes, I understand completely. I have a weird background. I'm a mathematics major. Much to my mother's chagrin, I didn't become the doctor that I could have, but I went into computer. Well, no, I didn't. I went into marketing research, which was awful. And then I started writing software in marketing research and realized I can automate all this. And then from there started my real career.
So you started out writing software for market research, for marketing?
For myself, because I was tired of counting things. So I started to realize there's a way to do this automatically. Why am I could just sit at my desk and shoot a little basketball into a net, and my software would run and do all the calculations.
Got it.
And that's, because I knew the math. Yeah. So it was easy. So I left that. I went into advertising for no other reason than I like to say they were dumb enough to hire me. And I have radically changed the advertising world over the years. I was the guy that created real-time buying of ads around all the pages. As MediaMath CTO, I think I had 7 patents, but I loved it. I mean, I did. I just always said it's like the mob. They keep sucking you back in. So
Roland, this, I want to make sure I understand what you created, because if I get it right, it is pretty profound. It's literally a bidding process that and that's all directly related to traffic flow and eyeballs and clicks. And so the less, what we see when we buy ads on Google, right?
Yes.
When we exactly. go, yeah. And we say, I'm going to allocate $68 a day or whatever it is. And then based on the amount I allocate and whatever I select, you're magically figuring out, okay, you're going to get one ad on this with this keyword or whatever.
Yeah. So the original premise was because I was, I don't know how this happened, because I traded for the stock market or Wall Street traded, for a couple of years, I took that concept. Right. And said, why is the advertising industry not going this way? These should be all quant traded. And I went to everybody. I visited Google. I visited Right Media, Rubicon, all these companies down the chain, all these exchanges. And I said, I want a direct pipe. And I said, you want what? I go, I want a direct pipe of all the ads that are coming in, because I'm going to bid on them in real time. And they thought I was insane, but they gave it to me. Mm-hmm. And the only one that didn't give it to me, I'm going to say this, and I hope some of your audience laughs, was Yahoo, which makes complete sense.
That does make sense.
It does.
Because it's
they said it wasn't
Yahoo?
Yeah, they told me it wasn't real. I'm like, okay. I mean, even
there was a time when you said Yahoo. Now it's Yahoo.
Yeah, exactly. So that was the start of it. And then I wrote with a very close friend of mine who is the CEO of a company now, and is a rocket scientist. Actually, no pun intended. He and I wrote on over the weekends. We'd go to the office and we would write all these algorithms, and we would understand what to buy, how much to pay, likelihood of winning, all this kinds of stuff. And we would dominate the industry because nobody could understand how we could figure out all this stuff. But I mean, you get a guy from Caltech and Stanford and me, who's, a little crazy, and you end up with that. And then from there, after I left, I met back with my CEO, Francis, who I've known since 97. Hmm. And we had this sort of cyber idea and how we can apply AI and what's lacking in the industry. And that's where I'm at.
So talk a little bit about that. I mean, I'm fascinated because one of the things, maybe we'll start here. I'm a Gilligan man, okay? I mean, I'm fortunate I'm still able to keep my nose above the waterline in this business. I try to keep up. But I know machine learning has been around for several decades anyway, right?
Sure.
And I've read and have tried to understand this transformation that took place with Transformer and everything going to language. But I'm hoping maybe you can, for myself and the audience, kind of just stack up the variations, because there's machine learning, there's deep learning, there's AI, there's Gen AI, there's, you know, large language models.
Yeah.
Talk to me like I'm a, you know, like I am a Gilligan, like a kindergartner, and as best you can anyway.
Yeah. So of course. So think of machine learning as understanding a set of rules and whether or not things abide by those rules. Think of AI as adapting and creating more situations. And a good way to look at all of them, is imagine you and I are playing chess. And you make a move that I've never seen before. What is my head going to do? My head is going to start scanning the board and start trying to figure out what is the best approach. Because I have one thing in mind, right? I'm trying to win the game. Right. So if I make a move,
I'm going to look at where I think you're trying to go.
Yeah.
You know, how I can counter it. I mean, I'm going to be obviously looking right. at a lot of different options, of course. Right?
So I'm going to make a move and making a gross assumption that my move is correct. And what AI can do over time is, so the ML side knows you're allowed to move these pieces, right? And I have learned from deep learning and all these kinds of things. Oh yeah, I know that move. He does this. But he doesn't know the way the board's set up. That's the problem. It's not a problem. That's the reality of ML. ML understands that there is a board and this is the number of pieces you have. It's not that it's seen every single situation you could be in. What AI does is it takes it a step ahead and says, all right, you know what? I know what ML knows because it helps me. ML is like, well, like as you refer, the Gilligan. ML tells AI, don't do that. And then AI makes a move, and if it fails, it remembers that it fails, and then it tries a different move the next time. But it didn't take deep learning. It didn't take me to plug in 7, you know, million possible moves. It took one. And then AI adapts and adapts and adapts. And that's a lot with all the large language models.
Right.
They, when they don't know the answer,
they guess, they right?
Come up with one.
But they, I mean, they, it's a best guess, it's nonetheless, but it's a guess, right? They're going, based on everything I know, I'm going to guess it's this. It's no different than the predictive words that pop up when you're typing, right?
Correct. That's it. It's no more predictive. And the fact that, I mean, the craze over LLM to me is, truthfully, is a little ridiculous, but
it's the accessibility, isn't it, Roland?
It is.
It's. I mean, come on. What I'm probably not quoting this statistic exactly correctly because I don't remember it, but it was the speed at which ChatGPT got to 100 million users was, I want to say, like a 3 months or just. I mean, it was just or it was a crazy a small amount of time relative to the 2 years or 3 years it took Instagram and Facebook to reach the same number of users. So
yes, without a
doubt. I think part of it's accessibility, but it's also it's the interface that, because you're giving it back to me in something I know, the text language.
Yeah.
Right.
Right. That's a great way of looking at it. And everything you give back helps it. So in the same breath, as you've seen with OpenAI, you know, you really can't steal quotes from books, but that's a completely separate side issue.
I have a question for you on that. That's a good one. You know, I remember, it reminds me, you may remember this. So Apple tried to copyright, it was their user interface, or there was something trying to keep Windows or anybody from being able to have this user interface. And if I remember the analogy, and I'm going to maybe butcher it, but it was like a poet can't copyright the alphabet.
Yeah, that's it, I think.
But a poet can copyright a poem.
Yeah.
And so, you know, it's that, it begs the question. So here's where I was going to go. And I'd love to hear your view on this. And I've asked this before to other people. Because I advocate, and I don't know, tell me if you agree, we should look at AI and LLMs in particular as assistants that have an IQ of 1,000 but are dumb as a rock without the proper instructions, right?
That's dead on.
Okay. So here's the question I have. First, it's 1958. You and I are not born yet. Gave them a clue. We're young. At that time, if I wanted to send a letter to my customers, I would push a buzzer and Jim or Mary would come into my office and I would instruct Jim or Mary to either dictate or go write the letter we send out at the beginning of every quarter and bring it back to me. Would go, write, bring it back. Okay, sign it. Right? My name's.
Yeah.
I send a task to ChatGPT to write a letter. Comes back. Do I sign it? And it's amazing the different answers that I'll get. Some say absolutely no way to absolutely yes. So where do you stand?
I stand in the middle. You better read the letter. That's the first thing. And can it come up with the correct answer? 100%, it can come up with the right answer.
Right.
Can it come up with the wrong answer? 100%, it can come up with the wrong answer.
Yes.
So I remember we were playing around with it, and somebody did. They asked the distance from, I think it was California to Japan, and it answered it in the most bizarre way, and it was wrong. And like, all you got to do is look on a map and just take a ruler and see the scale.
Exactly.
Like, that's like 9x off.
Right. Are we talking as the crow flies or as United flies? I mean, that might make a difference, right?
Right, right.
You know,
am I doing circles?
Exactly.
On one level, LLMs can be extremely helpful. When they're really, really helpful is when you have a very detailed question and a very detailed outline of what you want it to give you.
Detailed task, right?
Detailed task. That's it. Right. Don't
That's
ask
my question.
So you just said 1950s.
Yep.
I'm going to say this ahead of
time. Over time, Mary would get to know me, but I think first day.
Mary knows you. Mary knows what you're asking of her.
Yep.
Mary's a new hire, and you ask Mary to go, I need this written up.
Right.
If all you said was, I need you to write up a letter for the, imagine it was the VP. Okay. Yep. Need you to write a letter for the VP. She'd look at you blindly.
Right.
Because
no context.
She has no idea what you're asking her.
Yep.
So you think of it that same way. You know, the more detailed you get, the better it is. And that's where LLMs,
right?
Really kick
it's
in.
It's all about the prompts.
Yep.
When it comes to that. Yep.
Yeah.
So when you say you fall in the middle, obviously you'd read it. You want to make sure that it wasn't you talking out your butt, right? Saying something stupid. But let's say it came back and it was spot on.
That's great.
And you'd sign it?
If it was spot on, I'd sign it.
Yeah, me too. I mean, I don't see a problem with it. I think the fact is we're going to have to when I went to it just reminded me of this. So years ago, I went on a guy's trip up to Alaska. I lived up there for a number of years, but this trip was after I'd been up there, and we went and flew out to Bristol Bay and went up on a what they call a river taxi to our cabins that were, you know, 6 miles up. I mean, it was amazing. When we're standing at the Bristol Bay airport waiting to get our luggage, the mosquitoes were like unbelievable. And this was our first real, you know, outside exposure out in the nowheres. I mean, and they were, I understand, they're like the state bird, man. I mean, there were so many. But what I was going to say was, there was this guy standing, cowboy hat tipped down, and one of my buddies who was with us was slapping it. Man, the mosquitoes. And all he could say was, get used to it.
Oh, my God.
it was just, get used to it. It was just hilarious. So
I love that.
It sometimes that's what you have to do, is just get used to it, you know?
Yeah, sometimes you do.
So let's talk about how you're doing things differently in the world of threat hunting, and how you're employing AI to do that. Because as I understand, and I saw a bit of a demo of your product, was impressive. What I was, I think, most impressed by is it. I'm an analogy guy, Roland, and it seemed like it was absolutely a rifle. You know, I mean, there was, you know what I mean? It was, it wasn't like I'm trying to get the whole kitchen sink and shooting a bunch of stuff. I thought it was very clean, very precise. But why don't you talk a little bit about the vision of Insight Cyber and how you got it to where you are today?
Yeah. So my CEO, Francis, he's a member of the Aspen Group. He's a brilliant developer as well. And he realized there was so much information coming off of the pipe that nobody leverages. So it's funny, I had this conversation with him while sitting in the parking lot of a Home Depot. Mm. This is way back when. Him and I realized there's a way to do this the right way. And a lot of the companies today, you're going to see so many buzz terms in all these companies because they have massive marketing departments.
Yep.
I'm never going to name anybody, but I can tell you for a fact, the majority of them in our space, they just produce, all they want to do is produce events for you. And
events and alerts.
Blind to them.
Sure.
Right? Your goal should be for no false positives and no false negatives. So that's where our premise started. And everything else is garbage. And I said, I can do this in real time. And that's what I did. And with the mathematics I understand or know, because I've taken way too many classes in things like stochastics and game theory and all these things.
I can't even spell stochastics.
Stochastics. S-T-O-C-H-A-S-T-I-C-S.
I mean, it's like stochastics. This is like
it's the probability of anything. basically. Like, you know, the water falling off a leaf.
Yeah.
Sitting at such and such a degree of such and such a type of tree. It's pretty funny. But,
you know, one of my abs, I mean, not one of my, the class I absolutely despised.
Go ahead.
Statistics. So you and I'd get along just awesome. Cause I mean, you sound like
one of the polar opposites.
You love that stuff. You swim in it. And me, I'm going,
I do.
Let me hold the door for you. Bye.
Well, you know what? Statistics I don't love, but probability I love. And
yeah, I guess I just, you know, I don't know. Maybe it was time of life where I was, but man, I just didn't.
Nonlinear statistics is kind of fun. Yeah, it's not. Let's not joke. But
it wasn't for me at the time. But
yeah, no, I understand completely. So we decided that we can look at so many things. I mean, you'd be shocked at how many things we can see coming off a wire that I can examine and run calculations against.
Hmm.
Whereas most companies, pray to God, they can look at five of them.
Hmm.
I will not name them, but almost all of them look at between five and seven, where I'm looking at 100.
Hmm.
And I start to recognize anomalies in systems within 1 minute. So like my first test was, could I have detected Stuxnet? So I ran it against Stuxnet. I found Stuxnet in 2 minutes. And we realized we might have something. And that's kind of the way we started. And see, like, that's where a company like Checkpoint comes in huge.
Yeah.
Because a way of thinking about it is, if your house goes on fire, it's really bad for your neighbor, right? Because they might be coupled together. But the people down the block have a chance to see the fire. So maybe they can water their house down so the fire stops.
Mm-hmm.
So you have to sometimes sequester groups and say, sorry, but you're collateral damage and I can't help you. Like, mm-hmm. Do the best you can to get away from this. But I have a whole nother city to worry about.
Yeah.
That most people, they don't see it that way. And I did not employ any of the standard practices that are used in ML and AI. I did not do, there's not a single neural net, deep learning. There's none of that. It's all under patent filings. But I learned it from a whole bunch of stuff from, you know, even in the biology world, from virus detection and all these kinds of things, and some brilliant people I've met over the years.
Mm.
And I was like, well, this is very applicable. And why are we not doing things like this? Why are we always approaching the problem in the same way?
Yeah.
And I will blame, because that's the way they teach it.
Yep.
And I've taken one computer science class in my entire life.
I'll give you a stupid example, but you know, we're not even in the same category. I'm on a youth ball field and you're in the major leagues. But I think of, I mean, at the what it really gets down to is looking at something differently. Right. Instead of looking at a problem like everyone else is looking at it and approaching it like everyone else, seeing it differently requires looking at it differently. And, you know, when I bought MetaInfo back from Checkpoint in 2002, I remember, and again, you'll laugh, I'm a Gilligan, okay? But I remember asking my director of development, Steve DeYoung, I said, you know, hey, look, why is it that when I go into a company with one of these and I plug it into my laptop, because there wasn't Wi-Fi, and then I plug it into a jack in that company, I get on their network.
Right.
Fully routable IP address. Why is that? His response, well, that's the way it's done. I said, but wait, wait, wait. Now, he's a TCP/IP purist, right? So I said, well, what do you mean that's the way it's done? And he said, Grant, the RFC states, if a DHCP server receives a broadcast discover from a host, it must respond. Period.
Yeah. So,
I mean, he's reading from the textbook TCP/IP RFC book, but, and he's right. But I said to him, I said, but this makes no sense. This is my network. You came into my building. It's my network. And this really was the impetus for us to create something that we called Safety HCP that was nothing more than creating some wedges in that nine exchanges to look up a MAC address in a database. I mean, stupid but simple. And what I told Steve is, I said, look, this will protect the company from the unintended.
Yeah.
So you can really go after the guys that are out, because Steve said, well, that's fucking stupid. I said, why? He said, well, you just go out to the C prompt and self-assign an IP address. I said, yeah, well, you know how to do that. But
yeah, most users don't know how to do that.
And certainly the growth. You know, remember, this was 2003 when we were doing this. But I see it similarly in that the only reason we even ended up making it, and it was very successful until Cisco froze the market by announcing network access control, NAC. Yeah. And I actually used to do a David Letterman top 10 of, you know, you think it means network access control, but it really means not available currently. You know, nice attempt, Cisco. But the point was, here we're talking, you know, IP services, layer 3, first software in the stack. But we looked at it differently and actually solved the problem until it really became a little bit more airtight. And so it sounds like you, with your unique mutual funds or trading background and biological insights and background, I mean, to apply some of those principles to solving network threats. I think that's fascinating.
Musical background. So it all sort of ties to, I don't speak of it normally, but I have a huge musical background. I'm a classically trained pianist.
Really?
Yeah.
Wow.
And, you know, they all tie together. That's why I went into mathematics, because everything ties together. And for me, it was, I always said, programming is an art form. It should be considered an art form, because if done well, it is beautiful. But I agree with you 100%. The problem so many companies have made over the years that I have seen is that they make the gross assumption that this is the only way to do it.
Right.
And they don't think outside. And I have only ever hired – it's funny, because if you ever interviewed for me, and I've interviewed thousands in my lifetime – If you've ever interviewed for me, you would have gotten something so bizarre of a question where I gave you the opportunity where there are so many answers to it. Mm-hmm. And I want to see the way they expand and their brain goes.
Yep.
Because then I know, all right, you think outside the box.
Right.
That's what I want.
Yeah.
Are we going to be wrong? Absolutely. Are we going to make mistakes? Absolutely. Are we going to learn from them? Absolutely.
Yeah.
And I've always told people after, man, God, it's been a long time, 25 years of being a CTO, I have I can't tell you what to do, but I can tell you what not to do.
Yeah.
And that is critical, because if you do it the right way, you should be promoting your staff to take over your job. That's the way you should be.
Totally.
And I've done it multiple times.
Yeah.
And I love it. And most of the guys that have worked, I've never had a single person in my lifetime quit. Ever.
That's something to be proud of.
Yeah, that directly reported to me. Yeah. Never quit. They all still speak to me. I still see them. They have all been very successful. And I tried to teach them everything that I know and the way that I look at the world. Yeah. And it's like, don't worry about what everybody says you're supposed to do.
Right.
You be you. Do you. Figure it out.
There, one of my favorite lines is, to swing. Swing. That's what I tell my kids. Swing for the fences, man. Swing away. Just go for it. Because, I think it was Jobs when he was talking to some Stanford at a commencement speech. It was, if there's anything that should give you the motivation, the inspiration, the drive to try to change the world, it's knowing you're just going to die.
Yeah.
And I heard something the other day that really made me kind of have, kind of gave me pause, right? And it was, imagine 100 years from this day right now. No one's going to know us.
No.
Do you know your great-great-grandfather? I don't. I never knew my great-great. I didn't know my great.
I didn't know my grandparents. I knew one.
So when you really, unless you're, a Jeffrey Dahmer or Gary Ridgway or none of us want to be that. And there are some other examples that, you might be an Elon Musk or someone. It sounds like some of your accomplishments certainly are going to be remembered for a long, long time. But for me, I don't have any numbers, no patents. I've had some ideas now and then.
Yeah.
And I guess my point is, it's what does give me more inspiration to try.
Yeah.
And then I don't ever finish that sentence. Right. There's a quote, a great one from John Lennon that said, my mother used to always tell me that, the goal in life is to be happy.
It is.
And when I took a test in school, the question was, what do you want to be when you grow up? And I wrote down happy. And my teacher said, you don't understand the question. And I told him, you don't understand life.
That's beautiful.
I mean, it's true, right? It's true. And like we were talking about earlier, one of the greatest joys I know I certainly get now is by sharing and helping and mentoring and guiding others. That really gives me a great deal of pleasure, more than ever, for sure. Hey, I want to ask you about something.
Yes, shoot.
I was reading about this, and I try to stay up on this stuff, but model autography disorder, MAD. Have you heard about that?
I have not.
So this is what happens when AI eats itself.
Oh, that's interesting.
And it's the whole premise that, what's AI? It lives on data. Right. I mean, it's all about data.
Yeah.
And so, as it is rapidly consuming everything that's ever been printed, published, what have you, there's going to be a point where, it's all going to be consumed. So then there's going to be this increasing creation of AI generated data that it'll start to consume
itself. Oh, that is absolutely fascinating.
And you look it up, and it's named after, you know, mad, like mad cow disease, right? Because that came out of rendering and feeding cows to themselves, right? Or at least that's the theory. And it's really fascinating. And one of the suggestions is similarly to inbreeding.
Yeah.
It highlights the weakness, right? It highlights the weaknesses in the genome, as I understand
it. And exacerbates them over time.
Right. Same is what it's suggesting. That
fascinating.
Check it out. Yeah, someone with your brain, you'll really dig into that. I'd love to hear.
Yeah,
so I want you back after you read into that and hear what you think.
I'm going to read into that, and I question. So you said something that was critical. In an LLM model, it is producing information that people are utilizing to post publicly that it's going to eat again.
Mm-hmm.
Right? In my world, AI and ML sort of link up, and what it learns, it knows it learned, and it doesn't ask the same question because it doesn't need to. And a great example I've always given was you come to the end of a block and you can make a left or a right. How many calculations do I really need to do to determine?
Yeah.
I mean, if you go straight, bad. If you make a U-turn, bad. You got a left or a right. Pick one.
Yeah.
And, it understands what happens when you go to the right, and it understands what happens when you go to the left. Done. The game's over. Like, I've solved that problem.
Right.
And AI has to recognize, and I believe that a lot of these, this is you hit dead on the problem of LLMs, is there is no control over what people use and feed back into the system because they don't know they're feeding it back into the system.
And so using that example of a T in the road.
Yeah.
You're going to have that question will continue to get asked, even though it already has answered it, but it might not be asked in the same way with the same question in the same manner. And each time LLM is going to have to go out and look. Now, it might find the right answer most of the time, but it also might find something wrong, right? Because it doesn't have a very specific, I've met this before. It's either or B. This is
the difficulty of AI. In mathematics, it's basically overfitting the model, right?
Right.
Overfitting is a tough word to use, but it's definitely understandable why this is an issue. Well, and I think that is why they don't know what it's going to spit out.
This is for me, Roland. I don't know if you've seen, and I am a big advocate. I encourage everyone to watch it. Again, remember, coming from the Gilligan. But it's a video on YouTube called The AI Dilemma. And it's from the Center for Humane Technology. So it's no slouch video. It's an hour, 7.5 minutes long.
Okay.
Check it out. Because, they have a statistic that one of the first statistics they show is that 50% of the engineers, 50% of the experts believe there's a 10% chance or greater AI is going to wipe us out. And they actually have a very specific question that they ask. So it's not a complete doomsdayer, but it does present a number of unintended consequences. that are manifesting themselves. They call the contact we're having right now with LLMs, they call them Gollums. Generative, large language, multimodal.
Or JRR tokens, Gollum.
Yeah, exactly. But the idea is, for me, the struggle, Roland, is in math, like you just mentioned. I mean, it's, you know, it's most of the time, whatever follows the equal sign, you can walk back through however much is on the other side of the equal sign and figure out how you got there.
Yeah.
Right. And that's the part I have a struggle with. And there's a numerous examples in that video of these large language models. And it's not a single model, but it's multiple models that as the parameters increase, it just does goofy stuff that is completely unpredictable. One they talk about is it only is English in, English out. Nothing English, English. Nothing gets but the parameters as they get larger. And one day it answers in Peruvian.
Right.
And they just straight up say, but nobody knows why. That
is wild.
That's weird and should be somewhat concerning if we're starting to blow this all out in every app that I have now has a little AI co-pilot or agent or somebody I can chat with. You know, it's pretty amazing.
Well, I will tell you that I found that when I was writing software for Wall Street and the AI I wrote for them, it would learn how to trade intelligently and it wouldn't eat on itself because the environment was always changing, but it wouldn't eat on itself. It wouldn't be like, oh, look, there's a whole bunch of shares to buy, which I just sold.
Right.
You know what I mean?
Like, sure.
It's smart enough to, this is where ML comes into the equation.
Right.
Like, prevent, it's terrible, the dog from eating its own poop, right? Yeah. That's not going to work.
Yeah.
It's what you're getting nothing. It came out for a reason.
Exactly. Nutritional value.
Yeah, this has no nutritional value. Thankfully, my dog doesn't do that. But, you know, there's a significant amount of things that need to be put in place, in my opinion, especially the LLM world, that need to be intelligently done, whether or not they were markers or something, that said, don't eat this.
Right.
Do yourself a favor.
Yeah.
Don't eat this and don't just ignore it and keep moving. And, you know, like you said before with TCP, the purist says, no, it has to.
Right.
The rational guy, which is what I like to believe myself, says, yep. No, you don't.
Yep.
Stop it.
Right.
That's dumb.
Yeah, exactly. Exactly.
Just and call it a day.
Yeah.
You've done great. I'm very proud of you. Let's move on.
Yep. So last thing I want to get to before we run out of time, and I really appreciate your time and I find it fascinating. But this was an interesting position taken on the part of a guy we actually just had at our kickoff. And I feel horrible that I can't remember Peter's full name, but he was for many years the CEO at JetBlue. Okay.
Oh, yeah, sure.
But his position, albeit quite controversial, still I thought was interesting. And it was, you know, and here's what brought it up for me is, so we had this innovation award where we had this contest with a bunch of different companies or different partners showing their cool new solution. And the winner was prompt security.
Right? Okay.
And it obviously it's in the name, but it's for all the companies that want to prevent employees from putting in some proprietary information or some information that they shouldn't be putting, right?
Yep.
Control the prompts, control what you're putting. Don't go dumping my financials into the ChatGPT. Okay.
Right.
His position was don't control any of it, but have a private LLM, have a private AI that is just your company's, only for employees, and put no restrictions on them. It was really, I mean, it was kind of the opposite, right, of what we talk about in terms of controlling, because he kind of believed that's what enriches the AI. What do you think?
It does. It enriches the AI. And as long as it can be safely contained, it'll help people. The issue is the securely contained.
Yep.
And, you know, that should go through audits and checks and everything else before it ever gets released, even internally. Look at it as a self-insured company, right? They have all the information. The question is what happens if somebody breaks in? And how do you make sure that everybody's okay? But I do believe that the information in and of itself is very valuable. And if it has to be obfuscated,
right,
let it be obfuscated. Mm-hmm. Just let me understand, which is one thing I truly believe in. Obfuscate information. I don't need to know who you are. I don't need to know where you are. I don't need to know your financial account numbers. I don't need to know any of this. Stop it.
Right.
What I want to know are your, you know, the behaviors of person A and versus person B versus person C, and just keep going down the alphabet. And that becomes way more valuable because now I start to understand the dynamic and I've essentially removed a degree of freedom, which is huge mathematically, because I don't care.
Right.
I don't care who you are or where you live.
Fewer columns makes it easier, right? I mean, fewer columns of data, right?
Yeah, absolutely. If I can narrow things down to a simple yes or no question, the world has become so much easier mathematically.
Totally.
But I get it. And they weren't wrong. It's just you really have to safeguard yourself. Mm-hmm. People, they between the dark web and everything else, they love just, I mean, I know probably everybody listening to this podcast gets more phone calls, more junk email, more garbage, more spam attacks, more everything, because they just steal them and they post the names and every other piece of information that they can grab from these databases onto the dark web, and people buy them.
Yeah.
And, you know, I've learned not to, I don't even accept a phone call unless it's in my contact list. Yeah. So, and I've taught I have three boys and who are all now getting older, but,
three young men.
The first thing you look at in an email is take a look at the email address. What's the reply to? And they're like, oh yeah, that's not Chase.
Yeah, exactly.
Or that's not whatever. I'd name any bank, right? That's not Citibank.
Yeah.
Yeah. Joan Psycho.
677325. Yeah,
that's not RU, exactly.
It's like, okay, back away from the car.
Yeah, seriously. Give me the keys. You're apparently drunk.
It is extraordinary, isn't it, Roland, how we've never been more connected, but yet we seemingly have never been farther away from each other, right?
Yeah.
When we're all at the airport, everybody's praying, nobody's talking to each other. You know, it's pretty extraordinary. And when I look at our youth, you know, my youngest is 22, be 23 next month. But, you know, I mean, I've had to really push him to put himself out there, to go talk to people, to go interact with people, because, you know, I'm connected, but they're really not. It's just
You're not connected. That is not connecting by using a phone.
Well, I've asked my son before, hey, did you talk to so-and-so? Oh, yeah, I talked to him.
I said,
well, what did he say? Well, I texted him. Whoa. That's not talking to him.
No.
That's texting him. But I have to ask this before I let you go. Because you've been doing this a long time, and it seems like you've got a really great sniff on where things are going. What can we expect in the next, you know, 2, 3, 5 years, 10 years on the outside, if you want to go there? You know, just in the future, in terms of the infiltration and utilization of AI as it's seemingly now in everywhere. The co-pilot model, everybody's got it. You're going to see that more and more and more. But I mean, where are we going? Are we going to have robots? Like Elon is working on? Where's this all going? And I don't want to put you on the spot. I'm just, you know, I love you. Hear your thoughts.
No, it's a great question. I'm just thinking.
It's a big question for sure. But, you know, I'll tell you, one of the things that I was just talking about this with someone else, and it's why I'm not necessarily going to be around. But I think to myself, you know, Moore's Law came out in the 70s.
Yep.
By the time the internet started rearing its head, really, Moore's Law had been around for 10 plus, going on 20 years.
Yeah.
So, and had proven itself to be true. It was happening. And so when we moved out of our fishbowls of independent networks of Token Ring and Banyan Vines and Novell and all the others, and we got into the ocean of TCPIP, it just seems like if we'd only said, okay, wait a minute, this is all really great, but these wires are going to go away. These bandwidth issues are going to go away. These storage issues are going to go away. And what's going to remain is the data. That's what had we had that forethought of realizing we wouldn't have to fight for bandwidth. We would. So I'm just saying, is there a way to extrapolate that this stuff's going to continue to happen, right? But it's going to get more and more powerful. Yeah. Storage is going to be cheaper. Bandwidth is going to be higher.
There is a way. I believe the big breakthrough next will be quantum computing. I really do.
I agree.
And I think they're, you know, 5 years away, potentially.
Mm-hmm.
10.
Yeah.
And that changes the game, because now the calculations are happening so immensely fast that if we had this conversation when it came out, if quantum computing came out and we were having this conversation, things are very different. Very, very different. Because now you can start to replicate sort of from an AI level brain pattern and all this kinds of stuff.
Right.
And somebody said to me the other day, they said, you always have the right intent. And people, if they get a hold of it, will always use it wrongly. And, you know, I don't try to invent to enable poor behavior or poor usage.
Sure.
The problem is you can't. Right? You build it and go, holy, that is unique and different and exciting. And then somebody goes, oh, I can use this to blah, blah, blah. Yeah, and you're like, oh, my God, that wasn't its intent.
Yep. So, it's funny. You have to watch that video, The AI Dilemma.
I will.
Because one of the co-founders of the Center for Humane Technology, I think his name's Tristan, he's talking at the outset of the video before they actually get introduced. And what he suggests is it's like getting – this is what he said. It's like getting a phone call from Oppenheimer in 1944.
Oh, could you imagine?
And him saying, hey, I've got something that is going to have a pretty profound impact on the world.
And then somebody comes along and says, we should build a bomb.
Precisely. And so that's, frankly, that was the barb on the hook for me. When I heard that intro, I thought, man, that to compare generative AI, you know, LLMs and the technology that we have in everybody's hands today to nuclear power, atom bomb, right? I just said, man, I gotta watch this. And I'm really glad I did. And they had a previous movie you may have seen called The Social Dilemma.
Yes, I've seen it.
And you know, what they highlight is the unintended consequences. In fact, they suggest that the AI that we're interacting with today in these LLMs is actually our second contact, our meaning the major population. Yeah. And that the first contact was actually, as they put it, a race to the bottom of the brainstem. And that was the algorithms that are now in every Instagram and Facebook feed that, and we see it all the time, don't we?
Yeah.
It's just their heads down and they're just scrolling and they're swiping and scrolling. It's remarkable. And they highlight the unintended consequences that we've seen come out of it with, you know, body image issues and all these other things. And, you know, they then subsequently extrapolate similar unintended consequences that we may run into with this new AI. It's fascinating. So,
without a doubt, it is fascinating to watch.
Well, man, thank you so much for I got so much time with you. I really appreciate it, Roland. It was fascinating. I look forward to, I'm going to have you back and have you tell me about what you think of MAD and that whole disorder thing. What did they call it?
I have
model autography disorder.
Yes, I have it loaded up on my browser.
Cool.
So I'm going to read all about it.
Well, hey, thank you so much, man. Ladies and gentlemen, you got to check out Insight Cyber. They're doing really some amazing things. And I got to tell you what I think their mantra is: easy to use, easy to buy. I mean, it's just and I can really vouch for it. It is. It's clean. It's tight. It's very, very focused. You got to check it out. It's very, very cool. That's Insight Cyber. cyber, and I imagine it's insightcyber.com. Is that correct?
Yes, that's correct.
Okay. And that's insight cyber.com. But hey, thanks a ton, man. I really appreciate it. It was great talking with you. Ladies and gentlemen, I hope you enjoyed this as much as I did. I mean, as I've said so many times, I'm so fortunate because I talked to some just amazingly brilliant people. And man, today, having Roland on the program, Roland Cozzolino, he did not disappoint for sure. So please tell all your friends, share, subscribe, and make sure you come back, and we'll look forward to having you on the next episode of Talking Cloud. Thanks so very much.